Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. In just a moment, we will do our deep dive into Tyron Hopper and everything that he's going to bring to the Packers. The good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between, as we've been doing with every single other Packers draft pick so far. And we'll continue to do so until we've exhausted all of the Packers draft picks. Excited to really dig into this one because he's a player that I think some people thought maybe Green Bay drafted a little bit early. He's a player that I thought stood out a little bit in Packers rookie minicamp. So we'll get into all of that today. Just a few really quick updates before we get into today's show. First of all, shout out to Tony Dillon and Dan Verdick for becoming Packaday Podcast YouTube members. Appreciate you guys a ton. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. Or if you can't or just don't want to, still subscribe, like, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Anything you can do to support the channel, just tell a friend about the Packaday Podcast. That works as well. Always appreciate that. Meanwhile, if you're listening or watching on Cheesehead TV or Packer Report, just want to give those two outlets a shout out as well. They are always super supportive of the Packaday Podcast, getting to host the videos on both of their websites. And they've just been supportive of Packaday and myself from day one. So make sure that you are going out and supporting Packer Report and Cheesehead TV as well. Meanwhile, the schedule, the ever so wanted Green Bay Packers schedule for 2024 will be available next Wednesday. So a week from today, as you're listening to this, everyone is already super excited about who the Packers are playing. Everyone's already super excited about the season. We are less than 4 months away until the Packers and the Eagles play in Brazil. But next Wednesday, we will learn the order of the opponents and, the entire schedule, and we'll be able to break it all down, and you'll be able to make your plans for coming to Green Bay, and everything will be right in the world. So next Wednesday, schedule release, put it on your calendar. Should be super exciting to go through. And then lastly, Thyrick Pitts, who the Packers released with an injury designation. Of course, nobody did claim him, so he goes back on IR for the Packers. They will have to work out an injury settlement for him and then release him with that injury settlement. I think sometimes those do go a little bit under the radar, and the fact that those injury settlements do go towards the salary cap, and usually ones like this end up being pretty small overall, but though they do sort of add up through the course of the season. I'm sure Green Bay was not hoping to have to spend any sort of guaranteed money on Thyrick Pitts this season, but whatever injury settlement they work out, will ultimately go towards that salary cap. So just a little bit of a note there, but nothing to really worry about or be concerned about, other than it's just an update from Tuesday and nothing more. All right, that gets us to Tyron Hopper, linebacker out of Missouri. Let's do this deep dive and go through what I think are some, impressive highlights and some things we really need to talk about, because there's some things on tape and there's some things statistically that give me a little bit of cause for concern with Tyron Hopper. So we'll get through all of that. But let's start out with just sort of the bio and everything about him, and then we'll get into those positives first. 6'1 and a half, basically 6'2, 231-pound linebacker out of Missouri. He played the last two seasons at Missouri. He did play 3 seasons for Florida prior to that. So he's been in the SEC playing high-level football basically his entire college career. He is a fifth-year senior. He just turned 23 in April, so he will turn 24 next year. We don't have to worry about him turning 24 in season. Just turned 23, as I mentioned. 31.375-inch arms, a bit on the shorter side for the linebacker position, and 8.875-inch hands. In 2023, statistically, he had 55 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, no forced fumbles, 3 passes broken up, and 0 interceptions. In 2022, which I'll just say right now was his better season and his best season by far in college. If you do want to go out and watch the tape yourself and you want to see the upside, watch more of 2022. But in 2022, he had 78 tackles. He had 14 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, 1 forced fumble, 5 pass breakups, and 1 interception. In his career, spanning 5 years, which is basically 4 years, his first year he barely played, he had 215 tackles, 31.5 tackles for loss, 9.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 10 pass breakups, and 1 interception. All right, let's talk about one of the big things that we're going to be talking about from a negative side of things. Here were his statistics per PFF tackling. In 2023, he had a 22.7 missed tackle percentage. We'll go over how absurd that is in just a moment, but 22.7 missed tackle percentage. In 2022, it was 17.0% missed tackle percentage. And for his career in college, a 16.9% missed tackle percentage. He missed 33 tackles on defense alone over the past two seasons combined. 33 tackles in two seasons missed in the last two seasons combined. I just want to say that one more time. Now, going back to that 22.7% missed tackle percentage, just to give you an idea of what type of percentage we're looking at here, Micah McFadden in the NFL last year led the NFL in missed tackle percentage at 20.7. The second player on that list was Jordan Brooks with 16.5%. So think about that for a second. Micah McFadden was 4.2% higher on a missed tackle rate than any other player in the NFL. And Tyron Hopper was 2% above Micah McFadden. Now, I know Hopper played in college football and McFadden was in the NFL, but newsflash, things don't get easier in the NFL. They get harder in the NFL. So the fact that he missed 22.7% of tackles in 2023, which would have been 2% higher than anyone in the NFL, even Micah McFadden, who was 4.2% higher than anyone else. And then the next below that, by the way, below Jordan Brooks, was Alex Anzalone with only 15.8%. So we're talking almost 7 full percentage points higher than the third player on the list. That is an incredible, striking, and really poor statistic for Tyron Hopper. So that is obviously less than ideal. And even if you go say like, hey, maybe 2023 was an outlier, 2022, remember he had that 17% missed tackle percentage, which still would have been second last year behind only Micah McFadden, and 16.9% for his career, not an outlier, for his career, still would have been second behind only again, Micah McFadden. So that missed tackle percentage, one that we are going to touch on quite a bit when we get to the negative side of things. In pass defense, and these are per PFF again, in 2023, he had 30 targets against him. He allowed 21 completions in coverage for a 70% completion percentage, 231 yards, one touchdown, no picks, two pass breakups, a 103.6 passer rating, and three penalties. In 2022, 29 targets, 21 completions, 72.4% completion percentage, 165 yards, no touchdowns, one pick, two pass breakups, 71.8 passer rating, and two penalties. Over his career, he was targeted 89 times, 63 completions, 70.8% completion percentage, 608 yards, one touchdown, one pick, six pass breakups, 88.6 passer rating, and five total penalties. All right, from an athletic standpoint, had a 7.42 relative athletic score. He did not do the bench press. That was the only thing that he didn't do. He tested everything else. Was 65th percentile in height, 44th percentile in weight, 83rd percentile in the vertical, 91st percentile in the broad jump, 73rd percentile in the 40-yard dash, but only 37th percentile in the short shuttle, and 43% in the three cone. So the agility testing, he tested lower in. Everything else tested pretty darn well, and overall a 7.42 relative athletic score, putting him in the 74th percentile overall of athletic scores for linebackers. All right, his grades per PFF in 2023 had a 51.5 grade on 562 snaps. Remember, average is 60. So if average is 60, 51.5, not a great grade in 2023. In 2022, as I mentioned, is easily his best season, 77.5 grade on 764 snaps. In 2021, he had a 60.9 grade on 471 snaps. In 2020, a 47.6 grade on 75 total snaps. And then in 2019, only had three snaps graded 67.0 overall. He also had 468 career special team snaps, but he only had 32 coverage snaps in the past two seasons, which is really, when you're talking about special teams, primarily you want to talk about those coverage snaps and how much they actually went on punt coverage and kick coverage. Only 32 coverage snaps total in the last 2 years combined. Also, he has 4 special teams tackles in his entire college career. He has 3 missed special teams tackles in his special teams career. And again, that is per PFF. All right, all of that put to the side, let's actually dig into the tape and talk about what I saw as his positives and his negatives. And there were some glaring ones on both sides. So first of all, from a positive side, let's go over the good things first. The number one thing that I would say really stood out about his game is his blitzing ability. And they used him as a blitzer in a variety of different ways. They would use him right up the A gap. They would use him off the edge. They would use him as a delayed blitzer. They would do cross dogs. They would do double A gaps. They would do just about everything that you could possibly imagine. And the first thing that just completely shows up for him is his run and chase ability. He's got good speed. He's got closing ability to the quarterback, which is how he gets some of those sacks. Even some of the more agile mobile quarterbacks, he was able to track down. That is one of his real true strengths. And again, not only just with the ability to just purely blitz, and even when he gets on running backs or tight ends, he can beat those guys. But it's also, again, the ability to twist and stunt and run some games with him. And he knows how to get clear, how to sort of dodge some of those blockers and get skinny and get to the quarterback. He also has a really good sort of natural bend and a little bit of a rip move off the edge. So if you do want to use him a little bit off the edge, especially as a blitzer, he's got some of that ability and just kind of raw natural ability there. You know, he doesn't have any counters. He's not going to set it up a ton. You know, if NFL offensive tackles get their hands on him, they're just going to win. But like I said, he does have some unique true bend and rip ability across the edge that gives him some threat on that side of things as well. And it's evidenced by the fact that over the past 2 seasons, he had 49 pressures in those 2 seasons combined. And we're not talking edge rusher here, right? Like those are like, you know, pretty decent edge rusher numbers for 49 pressures. And maybe not like high end, but not bad, right? We're talking an off-ball linebacker whose primary job is not to rush the quarterback, and he still ended up with 49 pressures. So that pure blitzing ability, again, regardless of how you want to do it, he has it. And he can get the quarterback, he can chase them down, and he can make plays in the backfield. And that was one of the very first things that stood out. And again, usually with a linebacker, off-ball linebacker, you're usually like, all right, they can get through a running back, or maybe they can blitz off the edge, or maybe they can use, you know, some double A-gap stuff, or maybe it's just one thing. But he really does it in a variety of different ways, and he's got sort of that quarterback hunting mentality. Football season, no football season, it doesn't really matter. It's always Prize Picks season. There's never been a better time to get started with Prize Picks than right now with all the NHL and NBA playoff action, as well as the WNBA season getting ready to start next week. You guys have heard me talk about Prize Picks quite a bit, so let me just key you in on some of my favorite aspects that you may not know about. First of all, they have newly introduced star players that, if selected and part of your starting lineup, could result in a 10% payout boost. This has made the usual amazing Prize Picks experience even that much more exciting. They also have injury insurance, so even if one of your players gets injured and they exit the game in the first half and don't return in the second, Prize Picks has your back and does not count that as a loss. And finally, I get this question all the time. Yes, Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, Georgia, and most importantly, Wisconsin. My picks this week, I'm going with the ultra-hot Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson in the NBA and Connor McDavid for the Edmonton Oilers as they get set to take on the Vancouver Canucks. So here's what you need to do. Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. And that brings us to our second one as well, his ability to spy the quarterback. He's got enough agility and he's fleet of foot enough and can get sideline to sideline. You use him on that second level and just spy him in the middle of the field. First of all, that big vertical, 6'2" linebacker middle of the field. Some of those throws you're trying to get over the top. There's one where he gets really high up and the quarterback did a great job of layering it and getting it over his head. But that's another big piece in the middle of the field that you sort of have to navigate a little bit if you throw the ball. But if you don't, he's sitting there spying you, waiting for you to take off. And he does have great pursuit. He takes a good angle to the football and he's going to run you down more often than not. So those are the two biggest traits that he has at his disposal, in my opinion, his ability to really blitz the quarterback and his ability to spy the quarterback and chase down from behind when needed. And this is the other thing. He is an attacking downhill linebacker. Does that sound familiar? We just heard Jeff Hafley the other day say, I want these players attacking. I want them playing fast, rallying to the football, playing downhill football. This is the style of defense that he wants to play. And Tyron Hopper is an attacking, down the field linebacker who will run and chase, get to the football, and track you down. That's who he is. And that's, if you're going to use him to those strengths, you're going to get something out of him. Now, you may have to have specific packages for him. You have to may have to have specific ways that you utilize him and use him, but he has those traits to play in that style of defense. If we were talking here about Joe Barry's defense and like, hey, we're just going to drop him back 15 yards every time and then rally and get to the... No, it would be a nightmare because he doesn't necessarily have the instincts. And we'll get into some of those things in just a moment. I don't think he would fit in that style of defense at all. But if you're going to use him to attack, sniff out screens, spy the quarterback, blitz, maybe do some run blitzing and allow him to actually, you know, kind of jackknife his way into the backfield in a variety of different ways. All right, you got your guy. He can definitely go and do that. Overall, from a pursuit standpoint, regardless of what you're asking him to do, backside pursuit, maybe the run play is going, you know, stretch left and he's the guy on the backside of things. He's going to pursue you and track you down. We talked about it from a quarterback spy standpoint, from a blitz standpoint, opposite side blitz, you roll to the opposite side. He's still going to find a way to track you down. And he pursues you all over the field. Again, he has that hunter's mentality. He rallies to the football and he's going to find you. And that's, again, another strength of his game is this is somebody who has good energy. He plays really fast. And we'll talk about some of that on the negative side of things as well, but that's his speed. He's going to play with his pedal to the floor, playing maximum speed and chasing things down from all over the field. And you're going to notice him. And I noticed it right away at minicamp. There's a play that we saw a stretch outside to Marshawn Lloyd. And he's outside. We talked about it yesterday. If you missed that episode, go and check it out. How great he is at exploding outside, getting to that edge and just outrunning everyone. Tyron Hopper, and again, we're not live. We're not in pads. He can't actually make the tackle or anything like that. But he cut off the angle. He got sideline to sideline, and he cut that off and got Marshawn Lloyd in, you know, what would have been a 0 yard gain on the play. Like, that's the type of sideline to sideline speed that he has. That's the sort of pursuit ability that he has, taking good angles to the football. And he stood out immediately in rookie minicamp for doing those exact things. I do also believe that he shows the potential to be a really good player dropping into coverage. There's a play where they do this really sneaky play. Safety blitzes off the back end. And it looks like quarterback's looking right. I think he sees the safety come down and they're running kind of like some sort of intermediate crosser, or maybe it's a post. And the quarterback's thinking, oh my goodness, like that safety is vacating that area. I can go and throw that across and that's going to be wide open. Except Tyron Hopper dropped into that coverage. He's not expecting Hopper to be there. He's almost like lined up as a stand-up defensive lineman, meaning like he's kind of taking that responsibility of that gap. So the quarterback's not thinking he's going to drop into that spot. He drops into that spot. He does a great job getting depth. And then he does a really nice job reading the quarterback's eyes, getting to his spot that he's supposed to, reading the quarterback's eyes, and then getting over, getting in that throwing lane and picking off the pass. Really beautifully done. And there are plays that you will see on tape where he shows a very natural ability to drop into zone coverage. So again, it's not something he was asked to do a ton. There are absolutely things that he needs to improve upon from a coverage standpoint, but I do think there is something that's absolutely workable there, dropping into zones and even some man-to-man coverage as well. If you can kind of rein him in a little bit and sort of focus on some of those technique sort of things, I do believe you have somebody who could be very good dropping into coverage. All right, let's see what else. He is willing to take on blocks. How he's effective at it, we're going to talk about in just a minute, but he has the willingness to do it. And we see a lot of linebackers, they're just avoiding any of those blocks. We see that a little bit with Edgerrin Cooper. We see that a lot of bit with Edgerrin Cooper, to be fair. We do see it with Tyron Hopper as well. There will be times where he goes full bendy matrix mode and tries to bend around players rather than taking them on. But you will see it more in Tyron Hopper's tape that he's willing to take on the blocks. Now, again, his successfulness with it, we'll talk about, but he has the willingness to take them on, which is at least part of the battle in and of itself. He is rarely on the ground from the opponent. Now, he will fly all over the place and he'll dive and he'll try to do a bunch of different things that results in him getting on the ground because he's trying to make aggressive tackles. But I think I saw one play where the opposing offensive lineman took him and threw him to the ground. You just don't see it often. He's got pretty good balance, especially for kind of like a tall, leaner sort of guy. you don't see him get thrown around very often. Now, offensive linemen will latch onto him and drive him a little bit, but he stays balanced. He stays on his feet. And we always track players on the ground a lot because you can't do anything when you're on the ground. You're just not going to make plays when you're laying on the ground and an offensive lineman's pancaked on top of you. And you just don't see that with Tyron Hopper. So that is a positive. He's got good balance. He stays on his feet and he keeps himself alive, even if he is engaged with blockers on the play. As mentioned, he's got legitimate sideline to sideline speed. And we talked about that Marshawn Lloyd play in camp, but you see it all the time where he's taking angles sideline to sideline. He's getting there. Again, we talked about the pursuit. We talked about his ability to track down, but he has the speed to do it. It doesn't matter if he's taking good angles. It doesn't matter if he sees the play happening. If you don't have that speed to get to the sideline, you're not going to do anything about it. He has that speed. He has that closing ability, and he has that pursuit ability, which again shows up over and over and over through all of his college tape, not just at Missouri, but at Florida as well. He's a team captain, so it's another one of those players that, again, was a great locker room leader, was a somebody that they leaned upon as kind of leading by example. And this is just another great locker room character type that you're putting inside of your locker room and continuing to develop what that locker room already is. And like we've talked about, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to become a good football player, but a lot of these types that are team captains, it means that the game means a ton to them. And it usually gives you more opportunity to reach your ceiling and less opportunity to hit your floor. They're usually football junkies that have a really good IQ for the game, that care about it a ton and are going to work really hard at it. And hopefully that's what you're getting here with Hopper as well. The other thing is we talked about his ability to play aggressive, downhill, attacking. That's a scheme fit. If everything that we've heard about Jeff Hafley's defense is true, he should be a very good fit within Jeff Hafley's scheme. And then we talked about that special teams ability. Now, regardless of whether or not he played all those snaps in coverage, and he did have some missed tackles there as well, 468 career special team snaps is still nothing to sneeze at. And the fact that he has that experience, you have to think that Rich Bisaccia is looking at him as a potential core special teamer, especially early on in his career. If eventually he turns into a starting linebacker and is playing, three down defense, all right, then maybe you take him off teams. But to begin with, you got to think he's going to be a core special teamer for Green Bay. All right, those are the positives. Let's get to the negatives. Number one, you can probably guess from what we talked about earlier, it's tackling. Guys, I have never in my life seen a player fall off of tackles like Tyron Hopper fell off of tackles. It is almost indescribable. It literally looks like at times, not at times, like all the time, at Florida, at Missouri, his good years at Missouri, his not so great year at Missouri, on special teams, on defense. It literally looks like, I don't even need to play you Tyron Hopper tape. I could play you the videos of the guys trying to wrestle down a greased up pig and they just slip through. It is over and over and over and over again. And it is, in a way, shocking because you watch him and he plays with good intensity. Like I said, he's an attacking downhill player. He gets, he gets his arms out and he looks menacing. He looks like, he's going to just obliterate you. And then it's just this really non-physical, non-attacking, non-violent tackle. When you see him tackle, you go and watch Edgerrin Cooper tackle, and there is a physicality behind that tackle. That player is going to feel that tackle. And Tyron Hopper, it almost feels like he's just latching on and like just trying to hang on for his life. And it's like he's trying to drag him down rather than making that runner, that receiver, that tight end, whoever it is, feel that hit, feel that tackle. And with that, when he's going in, players are just breaking his tackles left and right. And the 33 missed tackles over the last 2 years are the ones where like he had in the grasp, like should have easily been tackles. There are plenty of other plays where he could have made tackles, could have got to that spot, tried to go for maybe a shoestring tackle instead, and also missed on opportunities to bring down the tackler. And when I say it is all over the tape, it is all over the tape in a very concerning sort of way. We talked about with Marshawn Lloyd that he's got sort of this catastrophic issue that if he doesn't fix it, he can't see the field. If you fumble once every 40 touches like he did in college, and you can't pass protect like he struggled with in college, you're just not going to see the field in Matt LaFleur's offense or in anyone's offense. It's a non-starter. You can't fumble. You have to pass protect. You want to see the field with any sort of real consistency, those two things are non-starters if they continue. For a linebacker, one of the prerequisites of the position is your ability to tackle. You cannot be missing over one out of every five attempts as a starting linebacker. Imagine one out of every five attempts this past season, they're breaking the tackle. And again, I'm not even talking about the close calls here. These are like the real legitimate should easily be tackles. And there are way more plays on tape that he should have been able to make and did not. And like I said, an alarming rate. That is a completely unplayable missed tackle percentage. You just can't survive in the NFL with that level of missed tackles. He also overruns tackles a lot, meaning he plays at an extremely high pace and he will go downhill and have that attacking downhill mindset, which is good. We want that overall, but he plays at such a high speed and just, you know, 100 miles an hour that so many times he overruns the play. They cut back and they've got this wide alley. That's not even labeled as a missed tackle, but that shows up a ton where he's not even getting, you know, hands on the tackler because he's running too aggressively in one direction and the running back cuts back in the other direction. You know, he's also, as we sort of mentioned, not an impact tackler. You know, backs, receivers, tight ends, when he tackles them, they don't move backwards. They move forwards. You are going to see NFL players, if he does not correct his tackling technique and does not get more physical as a tackler, when he makes the tackle, they're going to drag him for 2-3 yards consistently. And that's another issue where there is one play on tape where he's in the red zone and it's like, I don't know if it's goal to go. I don't know if it's first, second, third, fourth down or what it is, but it's goal to go. It's on like the 4-yard line. And Tyron Hopper makes contact with the running back at about the 3-yard line. And Hopper doesn't even come close to keeping them out of the end zone. It's one-on-one. Hopper has him dead to rights. And Hopper doesn't come close to keeping him out of the end zone. That is, again, a major concern. These are the plays you have to make to prevent touchdowns. These can be the difference between winning and losing a game. And he's just getting dragged through to the end zone. So that is a big-time issue as well. And he almost makes a lot of plays. A lot, meaning whether it's missed tackles or overrunning plays or, you know, should have got his hands on the ball, there are plays a lot of times where he's this close to making a big time impact play. And you're thinking, you watch him play, he's fast, he flows to the football, he's aggressive, he's downhill, he's attacking, and you're thinking like, all right, just going to be play after play, tackle after tackle, but he comes close to making these plays a lot of times, but he actually doesn't make them a lot of the times. And that's, again, a very major concern. There's good news, bad news here. Are you glass half full, glass half empty? The good news is he is getting to these spots. He wants to be there. I'm sure he's not trying to miss the tackle. So if you can get that cleaned up, he's everywhere he needs to be. He's in his spots. He's making aggressive plays. He's just not finishing the play. And that's kind of the big thing here, is it's just that finishing ability. Can you find a way that instead of, you know, you getting dragged 3 yards, you are knocking them backwards a yard? Can you find a way that instead of them just, you know, easily escaping your tackles, can you get them to the ground in some capacity? You know, can instead of overrunning the play, can you take it from 100 miles an hour to 60 miles an hour, get in that spot, break down, and then go make that play rather than them cutting back? There was a lot of almost on his tape. And if that all of a sudden becomes, instead of almost, he makes those plays, whew, you have a steal in the third round. But if he doesn't, and to be crystal clear here, this was not a one-year issue. This was all over 4 years of his tape. It's not like Florida and Missouri don't know how to teach tackling. They know how to teach tackling. This is the SEC. This is big time college football. It's not like his linebackers coaches Anthony Campanelli is going to be like, oh, did you think of doing this? His coaches at Missouri and Florida know how to teach tackling. Now, maybe Campanelli unlocks something in him. That'd be awesome. That'd be amazing. but you have to have some level of concern of how he finishes plays and takes that almost and actually turns it into big time plays for the defense. That's going to be the difference between bust or steal for Tyron Hopper. The next is, we talked about him being able to take on blocks, but man, he cannot get off of those blocks. And he will get eaten alive by bigger offensive linemen in space. If they get to the second level and get to Hopper, they're just going to keep pushing him backwards. And if they get engaged at all, he can't get off that block. So it's great that he wants to take it on and he's willing to do so, but it, in a way, it doesn't really matter because he just gets eaten up by that block and he can't get off of it and he can't go make the play. And sometimes it's still better than going in the wrong gap or, you know, trying to do too much and trying to go around it. You still have to at least be there and fill that gap as best you can. But he's getting, again, eaten up a little bit too much and he's giving a little bit too much ground and he's got to find a way to push back and or get off that block in an ideal situation. But he just really has not been able to get off those blocks at the college level. The next thing, and you can probably garner by our first two, is there's just an overall lacking of physicality to his game. You don't feel him on the field. I think I charted one sort of like really big hit in the 4 years of tape that I watched with him. It's very few and far between where you see him actually like, you know, make a big hit and have his presence felt. Like I said, so many of these are like latching on and then like trying to drag down while you're holding on for dear life sort of tackles. Not like Edgerrin Cooper where it's boom and you can feel it. You can see it on tape. You're like, that's a physical, intense attacking linebacker. You don't see that same thing. And the same thing with getting off of blocks. You know, you just don't see him play. If he could play with a little bit more violence, a little bit more ruthless aggression, now we're talking. But he hasn't done that in college. And I would love to see a little bit more of that because I want, we talk about it, hammer or nail. You see too much. Like even when he's going against smaller players, it feels like he's the nail. I want him to play that, you know, be the hammer. And again, it's such a weird thing because you see him, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. We've talked about that already, but you still, he's like 6'2", 230 pounds, playing downhill, good speed. And you see him coming at you and it's like, oh, he's going to make an impact. And then it's just like, it falls flat at the very end. And I just want to see him play with a little bit more of that aggression and a little bit more play strength and physicality. He also get confused by misdirection. There are times where you literally see him sort of like looking around the field and like losing track of the ball. And, you know, again, misdirection, reverses, sweeps, whatever it is, play action, it will give him trouble from time to time and just kind of locating what the play is and getting to his spots on the field. So that's something that needs some cleaning up. He lacks nuance to his game. And this is where we talk about, he plays 100 miles an hour and it's great that he plays fast. It's great that you want to see him playing fast, but there are times where you need to play a little bit slower and then read the play and then play fast. And he's just kind of lacking that nuance where it's just, it's all speed all the time. And you want a little bit more degree of nuance to his game. That change of direction, those poor agility testing drills, it does show up on his tape from time to time. I thought it showed up a little bit more in 2023, where just kind of some stiffness in his hips kind of showed up and that inability to change directions and run with players in coverage. Or if he does get beat inside, like if he's going 100 miles an hour and then they cut back, he doesn't have that quick change of direction to get back in the play and go make that play. And then I do wonder a little bit if he's a little redundant to some of the linebackers that are already on the roster. Yes, I know he's played a little bit of the Mike at minicamp and those sort of things, although that was basically two linebackers the vast majority of the time, even in minicamp. But I do wonder if he's just a weak side linebacker, like Quay's a weak side linebacker, like Coop's a weak side linebacker, and probably even Mike McDuffie. You know, it just needs to be. And I know that we've talked about, Goody said, hey, we're going to play a ton of nickel and everyone needs to be able to do everything. Well, you've got those guys. They're all the same, you know, basic type of player, you know, 6'2", 230, athletic, can get all over the field, sideline to sideline speed. You're getting the same guy, but is it a little bit redundant? Would it have been better to maybe get somebody a little bit more physical that can handle that sort of run stopping thing? But that's not the direction they went. But I do question that a little bit as well. So what's he going to bring to the Packers in 2024? I definitely think he's going to bring competition. I think he's going to bring competition to Isaiah McDuffie, Quay Walker, even Edgerrin Cooper. He looked good at rookie mini. It means nothing. It means nothing. And if you had to ask me, am I going to trust the tape or am I going to trust my, you know, first initial instincts from rookie minicamp? I'm going to trust the tape because I saw on tape over and over for four seasons. I got to see very little in minicamp in shorts and no pads, you know, this past weekend. But like I said, I did like what I saw. I could see why they potentially wanted to bring him into Green Bay. But ultimately, I think he just brings competition. Whether he ends up as linebacker 4, linebacker 3, linebacker 5, that will remain to be seen. But I do think he's going to bring competition. I do think he brings depth. Regardless of how you feel about the pick, Green Bay needed more bodies at off-ball linebacker. And you don't want to end up in a situation where you're bringing a guy in who can't do something. He has the tools that he needs to be successful at everything when you bring him in at linebacker. Now, he might end up being the number 4 guy behind McDuffie and Cooper and Quay. So be it. But they needed those bodies, and he's going to be a core special teamer as well. So even if he ends up being number 4 to begin with and can't get ahead of Isaiah McDuffie, my guess is you could still build some special packages around him, maybe some blitzing packages, maybe some QB spy packages. I think there are things that you can do with him. You know, maybe you get 3 of those linebackers, Quay and Cooper and Hopper all in the field at the same time. Maybe you blitz 2 of them and drop 1, and it kind of can change from time to time. I think there's some different things that you could do with that. So I do think there's ways to utilize him right away, but probably more role player, special teamer, depth piece in 2024, if I had to guess. But I do think he's a scheme fit. I do think he's an attacking linebacker. I think he's going to fit well within this Jeff Hafley defense and their mentality that they want. And hopefully they get all of those pluses and minimize some of those minuses. But the big thing, he's going to have to be a more consistent and efficient tackler moving forward. As I mentioned, caught my eye at minicamp. Tape was not great. It's not great. I'll just put it that way. There are, if you want to put together some of the really good stuff on tape, it's not hard to find. There is really great blitzing. There's really great QB spy stuff. There's a lot of stuff where he chases down plays from behind. There's a lot of stuff where he gets into the backfield and causes chaos. There's a lot of really good stuff on tape. But when you're taking a player top 100, you don't want some really big glaring issue like a linebacker that's struggled tackling at a completely unacceptable level. And you just saw far too much of that on tape, where it does give you that moment of like, man, you just really got to get that cleaned up, or you just end up with a linebacker who can't tackle. And it's like a quarterback who can't throw. It doesn't end up very well. So he's going to have to get that cleaned up. Never saw anyone miss tackles the way that he misses tackles, meaning he's there. He's ready to make the play, and he just can't make the play. So again, he's got to get that cleaned up. I do think he can be a core special teams player, but if he's on coverage units, guess what he's going to have to do? He's going to have to tackle. So again, he's going to have to get that cleaned up. I do absolutely believe that you can find a role for him. He looks the part when you see him in mini camp, and he's just going to have to clean up those fundamentals. But if he does, like I said, it's in his hands. I believe wholeheartedly this draft pick could be a steal in the 3rd round. If he just tackles better, I think he could be a steal. I think he could start. I think he could start right away. Legitimately. I really, really do. If he just cleans up his tackling, and then you've got a huge find at the end of the 3rd round. If he doesn't, you end up with a huge bust at the end of the 3rd round. And it's kind of just based on that one thing. If he cleans up tackling, guys, we're talking about a totally different breakdown. We're talking about a totally different player. We're talking about a legitimate, hey, he's going to come and press Quay and Edgerrin Cooper for starting time right now. That's how I feel about him. But if he can't, we're talking about he's probably just your 5th linebacker, and it's going to be a struggle for him to get on the field until he learns it. That's where we're at. It's as simple as that. Can be a steal, can be a bust, and it's going to be up to Tyron Hopper, dependent upon how he goes about taking care of those fundamentals and becoming a better tackler in the NFL than what he was at Missouri and at Florida in college. All right, that's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate you. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broaddad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, and Michael Shipper. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.